ังธรวาวะไหเตจัสวินาวะดิตมัสตุมามิวิชาวะไหโอมชันติชันติชันติOm Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
So verse 5, once more. What are we discussing now? These two verses, they are connected. Verse 4 and verse 5. They are dealing with what? The proper way of dealing with devotees. Okay. And especially verse 5 describes different types of devotees in terms of their spiritual advancement and also...appropriate way to deal with them. Okay. One should mentally honor the devotee who chants the holy name of Lord Krishna. One should offer humble obeisances to the devotee who has undergone spiritual initiation, diksha, and is engaged in worshipping the deity. And one should associate with and faithfully serve that pure devotee who is advanced in undeviated devotional service and whose heart is completely devoid of the propensity of to criticize others.So we spoke last time about these three types of devotees, Kanishta, Madhyama, and Uttam. And we mentioned that there are different criteria and different ways of explaining the qualities of these devotees. So we'll go briefly again through this, just to summarize it again. Kanishta, according to Nectar of Instruction, is...Who is Kanishta?
Neophyte.
Yeah, but that means who is Neophyte?
Not very well versed in the Vedas.
You're going now through the Nectar of Devotion criteria. Now we're talking about Nectar of Instructions. It's right there in the verse. Who has first initiation?
Okay.
He has Harinam Diksha, Harinam initiation.
He's engaged in worshipping the deity.
All right. Is he? Or this is for the second type? One should mentally honor the devotee who chants the holy name of Lord Krishna. This is the Kanishta. Verse 5.
Okay.
One should offer humble obeisances to the devotee who has undergone spiritual initiation. Here it means second initiation. This is one of the problems when we have dealings with Gaudiya Math sometimes. When they say Diksha, they mean second initiation. When we say Diksha, we mean first initiation. And sometimes this creates misunderstanding. So we should be aware of this. Yes.Yeah, this is second initiation.
But you're saying that we consider Diksha Harinam.
Yeah. In our ISKCON, you can say jargon. Yes. But this is the... You see, if you go deeper, then you understand even the ISKCON gurus, they would say the real initiation is second initiation. But I mean...When we talk when the devotees from ISKCON, they speak, what actually they mean when they say, is he initiated? That's my point. But in other circles, they will take he's initiated if he has second initiation. Or just to avoid misunderstanding. Yes.
I think that's because in previously, first and second were giving at the same time. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati.
Yeah, from his time, there was separation. Alright. So, first initiation, according to Nectar of Devotion, the Kanishta has weak faith and he has insufficient knowledge about Krishna, about Shastra. That means he can be easily, first of all, defeated in argument, and also if he is defeated, then he can decide that he will go away. So weak faith, weak knowledge. And according to Srimad Bhagavatam, Kanishta, he does not know how to regard other devotees and people in general. He cannot discriminate between different types of devotees. He doesn't know who is advanced, who is not, and how to deal with them. Madhyama, his qualification according to Upadeshamrita are that he has second initiation and he's fully engaged in devotional service, worshipping the deity. Nectar of devotion, he has strong faith. That means even if he is defeated, his faith is not shaken. He may go out, distribute books, and he might encounter some very clever atheist, and this atheist can defeat him in terms of arguments, but his faith won't be shaken, slackened because of this. He will continue. And why he can be defeated? Because his knowledge is not perfect yet. This is the second characteristic of Madhyama. He's not completely, he's not perfect in terms of knowledge. And according to Srimad Bhagavatam, what is the definition of Madhyama? He can discriminate, this is famous one, he can discriminate between yes, and there is fourth category, Krishna. So how he deals with these four? He has love for Krishna, and then he avoids the demoniac. He avoids. Why he avoids the envious people, the demoniac? Why the Madhyama avoids them? Yes.
For their own benefit.
For their own benefit. Yeah, but why for their own benefit?
What so do you mean? They don't commit offense.
So they commit offense. Did you get this point? Madhyama, because we say Madhyama avoids the envious people, why? Someone may think, well, because he's so envious. He doesn't like them. No. Because he knows that he knows that at this moment, at this particular stage of their evolution as spirit souls, these people are not ready to accept the message of Godhead, and if he tries to preach to them, they will commit offenses, and this will be harmful for themselves. Yes.
Why wouldn't the Uttama do that?
He would do also. When he wants to preach, he has to act as Madhyam.
If he's not preaching, then he will.
If he's not preaching, then he doesn't make this discrimination between devotees and devotees. For him, everybody is a devotee, and not only this, but everybody is more advanced devotee than he. Okay, then Uttamadhikari, according to Nectar of Instruction, he has attained the realized state of unalloyed Krishna consciousness, and his heart is free from this propensity to criticize others. According to Nectar of Devotion, he has strong faith and he is expert in logic and in Shastra. That means he cannot be defeated in the debate. He will defeat everybody. He will take on anybody. And according to Srimad Bhagavatam, Uttam devotee, he sees Krishna in everyone and sees everyone in Krishna. He sees everybody engaged in devotional service already. So there is no need of preaching in this sense. Because everybody is a devotee for him. Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives another interesting criteria. For the Kanishtha devotee, he says he chants sometimes the holy name. The Madhyama devotee, he's always chanting the holy name. And the Uttam devotee, when he appears somewhere, everybody starts to chant. Just by seeing him. And you can see, it works when some very powerful ISKCON guru appears somewhere. People just... Have you noticed this? It is happening. Oh. Or even when the devotees go out on Harinam, then the people just... spontaneously, when they see the devotees, they say, Hare Krishna. The same principle. Because the devotees remind about Krishna. They are reminders. The devotees are representatives of the super soul for the people in general. So they remind the people there is God and you're supposed to serve Him like this. So if you notice, conflicts inside or between religious institutions are generated because of, in terms of these three types of devotees. The Kanishtas. Why? Because, as we mentioned, they don't know how to deal with other devotees or with people in general. And they would always find a reason to fight. Usually the reason is that my faith in my church or in my temple, we worship God better, or not better, but we actually worship the real God, and you don't. We have monopoly over God. Only we know what God is. That means we have to strive to uplift ourselves, otherwise there will be always conflicts if we remain on the level of Kanishtha. And the association of devotees won't be very pleasing. If you have a society of Kanishtha devotees, then it won't be very nice. It is better than the Karmis, but it will be... there will be many conflicts and problems. So Kanishtha thinks, I am devotee. Yes, Mataji.
So,
you can say that in this element that most of them became preachers very quickly, and the preacher is the Madhyam is the preacher because he has to discriminate between four types of people in this sense. But also we see that there is a weakness because we can say the dealings among the devotees, they were not necessarily always going so smooth, and this is a symptom of Kanishtha mentality. Oh, I guess you have both of this. Yeah, but also many devotees speak about the hardcore ISKCON in the 70s and beginning of 80s, and when the mood was make it or break it. I have no personal experience. I don't know how it was then. It's difficult for me to comment on this. But I know the little bit of this mood I experienced when I joined. So there are good things and positive and negative things about this. All right. So Kanishtha says, I am devotee. He has this understanding. I am the devotee. I am devotee. And he is a little bit even proud of this. Madhyam, he sees someone are devotees, some people are devotees, some are not, and they will never become devotees. Until they maintain this mood, that they're envious. So he discriminates. And Uttama sees everybody, everybody's already a devotee. They're all engaged in devotional service. And they're more advanced than me. He thinks like this. But, of course, even the Kanishtha devotee, he is very fortunate. We should also consider this point. For example, in Bhagavatam, there is a famous verse in the third canto. It says, how fortunate is that person who chants the holy name? He must have bathed in all holy places and performed all austerities. You know this verse? It's famous. Have you heard about this? If you chant the holy name, that means you already performed all the Vedic rituals, you bathed in all holy places. And someone asked Prabhupada, that means that I also actually, because I'm chanting the holy name, I also did bathe everywhere and I performed all these tapasyas. And Srila Prabhupada answered, no, I did it for you, and now you take credit of this. And that's why you were chanting. In other words, the pure devotee, he can create all this pious background and all this Gyata Sukriti, he can create it for his disciples, although it doesn't exist originally. So I should try to progress from Kanishtha to Madhyam, because Kanishtha is very prone to commit offenses. And this is very dangerous, because he doesn't know how to deal with devotees. We know Lord Chaitanya was talking about this, the offense against devotees. So the whole verse, the main point of this verse is that we should try to we can say one of the points is that we should try to elevate ourselves from this offensive state of consciousness to the higher stages. All right. We'll move forward, because Bhagavad Gita we are still on 6th chapter, and I'm afraid in the future Maharaj will have to use this period for Bhagavad Gita, so I think we should speed up a bit so we can free this period. Yes?
I also asked him about that, and he said that we might continue a few more weeks on the
after.
Yeah.
Alright, verse 6. He's going to read. Bhavan. Yes, please.
Being situated in his original Krishna conscious position, the pure devotee does not identify with the body. Such a devotee should not be seen from a materialistic point of view. Indeed, one should overlook a devotee's having a body born in a low family, a body with a bad complexion, a deformed body, or a diseased or infirm body. According to ordinary vision, such imperfections may seem prominent in the body of a pure devotee. But despite such seeming defects, the body of a pure devotee cannot be polluted. It is exactly like the waters of the Ganga, which sometimes, during the rainy season, are full of bubbles, foam, and mud. The Ganga waters do not become polluted. Those who are advanced in spiritual understanding will bathe in the Ganga without considering the condition of the water.
Thank you. Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport, Avyabhicharini Bhakti means unalloyed devotion. A person engaged in devotional service must be free from material motives. In this Krishna consciousness movement, one's consciousness must be changed. If consciousness is aimed toward material enjoyment, it is material consciousness, and if it's aimed toward serving Krishna, it is Krishna consciousness. A surrendered soul serves Krishna without material considerations. Anabhidashita Shunyam. Jnana Karmadhyā Navritam. Unalloyed devotional service, which is transcendental to the activities of the body and the mind, such as jnana, mental speculation, and karma, fruitive work, is called pure bhakti yoga. Bhakti yoga is the proper activity of the soul, and when one actually engages in unalloyed, uncontaminated devotional service, he is already liberated. Sagunan Samaiti Chaitan. Krishna's devotee is not subjected to material condition, even though his bodily features may appear materially conditioned. One should therefore not see a pure devotee from a materialistic point of view. So the point is, we are not this body anyway. So even when we don't speak about pure devotees, we should try to see the soul, not the body. But especially when we speak about advanced devotees, then this point applies even stronger. Because that pure devotee, he is like this, the example of the mango. The coconut. Inside, when it's ripe, then inside you can. Another example?
The inside becomes detached from the shell.
Yeah, and then you can hear. Yeah. In the same way. Because the pure devotee, he doesn't consider himself the body. He is completely aware that he is the soul. So it is not appropriate if we see him in this way. He acts as a spirit soul, as a pure devotee, as a pure servant of Krishna. So we shouldn't think and consider his body as something very, even if it's as mentioned here, deformed or bad color or whatever. We should overlook this. Like, this is what Prabhupada, this is the word Prabhupada uses. We should overlook these things. It's not important. Unless one is actually a devotee, one cannot see another devotee perfectly. So if we want to really to appreciate this, we should be advanced devotees. And we will appreciate this truth according to our own realization in devotional service. No one should criticize the bodily defects of pure devotee. If there are such defects, they should be overlooked. What should be taken into account is the spiritual master's main business, which is devotional service, pure service to the Supreme Lord. Bhaktivedanta Maharaj was telling the story when he joined in Russia, and then at that time there was the original zonal acharya system, and then the guru was for everybody. There was one guru for the whole Russia. So when he joined the temple, when he came to the temple for the first time, there was one devotee who brought him a, who showed him a picture of the guru, and then he told him, "This is your spiritual master, and he is perfect. He is the perfectness." And then, but then, Maharaj saw that the spiritual master had glasses, and because he himself has glasses, so he thought, how he can be perfect? Glasses means he is imperfect. So how do we reconcile this? That the spiritual master is perfect and absolute, but seemingly he has this defect. Sometimes he has glasses, sometimes he has stick, he cannot walk properly, or sometimes he even. Okay, you can say these are things related to the gross body, but sometimes even he forgets verses, you know? He cannot quote proper verse. Or he makes mistakes. So how do we understand this? What means that the spiritual master is perfect? The bona fide spiritual master is perfect. What is the meaning of this? Yes? Yes, that basically this is the answer. Example of Jayadvaita Maharaj asking Prabhupada this question. So Jayadvaita Brahmacharya at the time, he asks, it seems that sometimes the acharya forgets a verse or makes mistakes. That means he's imperfect? Prabhupada, no, that you don't understand. Acharya is not God omniscient. He is servant of God. His business is to preach bhakti cult. That is acharya. And that is perfection. So, we misunderstand what perfection is. Question. Prabhupada. Yes, perfection means how he is preaching bhakti code. That's all. So if he represents properly the sampradaya, the message of his spiritual master, then this is his perfection, and he is perfect. And he is perfect because by this activity, he performs the natural, constitutional activity of the soul, which is devotional service. So he is perfect. So all other things, they should be overlooked. They're not important. This famous example, someone was, a reporter was asking Prabhupada, if you are perfect, then you should know how many, what was there? How many windows there in this? Yes, and then Prabhupada said, how many drops of water there is in the mirage? What's the use of this knowledge? Even if you had it, you still stay in the material world. You still suffer. So we have immature understanding what is perfection. We think perfection is something like knowing everything about everybody and stuff like this. So we should try to see the devotee from the spiritual point of view, in terms of his devotional service, his preaching, how he serves his spiritual master, how he helps the mission, not from material appearance. Then Srila Prabhupada quotes this famous verse from Gita, Apichet Sudurachara Bhajatama Mananyabak Sadhu Reva Samantavya Samyak Vyavasidohisaha. Even if a devotee sometimes seems to engage in abominable activities, he should be considered a sadhu, saintly person, because his actual identity is that of one engaged in the loving service of the Lord. In other words, he is not to be considered an ordinary human being. Prabhupada once said, even if you see Brahmananda Prabhu walking on the street and smoking, he still has to be considered a saint. Brahmananda Prabhu was present there in the class, and the devotees were laughing. Not that he was doing this, which is Prabhupada made the point. So by the conditioned nature, the devotee may have some bad behavior, but he should be taken as sadhu. Why?
Because he's engaged in the process, very fast, he will progress and be able to give up his
benefit. Yes. Because basically he goes on with devotional service, he doesn't go away, he doesn't stop with his devotional activity. He very soon will become purified, and this bad habit will disappear. Then the next point Srila Prabhupada makes, pure devotional service doesn't depend on birth. So there are two points here. First, those who are born in such families, the Goswamis, according to this formula, the Goswamis who are descendants of Sri Nityananda Prabhu and Sri Advaita Prabhu are certainly devotees. But devotees coming from other families should not be discriminated against. Indeed, whether the devotees come from a family of previous acharyas or from an ordinary family, they should be treated equally. One should not think, oh, here is an American Goswami, and discriminate against him. So this is one side of the story. The other side is that those who come from these regular families, or even lower than regular families, in our case, we come from sinful background, most of us, and we shouldn't become puffed up artificially. We shouldn't think that now I'm a Brahman, I'm a devotee. Because it never, to develop this pride never helps in devotional service. Srila Prabhupada makes the point that a devotee should be ready to take instructions from a superior Vaishnav. And the superior Vaishnav must be ready to help an inferior Vaishnav in all respects. So who is superior and who is inferior? What is the criteria? What do you think? Who is senior and who is junior devotee. Yes.
Maharaji gave one definition that the one who is protecting the values and protecting the values and the presentation of the philosophy is the senior position.
That means he has deeper realization. That means basically he's more advanced spiritually. He has stronger taste for Krishna consciousness and also better understanding of philosophy. So spiritual advancement, this is the most important criteria. We see the example of Shukadeva Goswami when he walked in the assembly, the Ganga, then everybody stood up, although he was only 16 years old. But everybody could see he's the most advanced. So, but there are also other creeds. Other creeds, yes. For, yes, okay. Knowledge. Yeah, they're valid. Because the Shudras, okay, there is the age, then Brahmanas should be the knowledge, then the Vaishyas should be the wealth, and the Kshatriyas
influence.
Yes, you wanted to say something? In Hari Bhakti Vilas, there are four such considerations given. First is the age. Then experience. If one is more, if one has more experience in devotional service, we speak here about devotees, then he's to be respected for this. He's senior in this, in this way. Then position. The temple president is senior than the temple devotee. But it might be the case that the temple devotee is older or has more experience, but still, in terms of management, the temple president is senior. He has to be respected for this.
That's a very hard balance. When my husband was temple president, I was 22. Mm. And then all the devotees were older than not all, but a lot of devotees were a lot older, a lot senior.
Yeah.
It requires
maturity to deal with this properly. Okay, age, experience, position, and spiritual advancement. These are four criteria. Who is junior and who is senior? And as we heard from this example, it is not always very easy to discriminate. And we should apply our intelligence. And we should ask for beg for guidance if we don't understand how to apply. So the conclusion of this verse is again, don't see Vaishnava from the material point and commit offense against advanced devotees. Yes.
Just on this list of qualifications for...
Yeah. It seems to me also like this. Although I didn't see the verse in Hari Bhakti Vilas. I just saw it quoted somewhere, but it seems to me that because definitely spiritual advancement should be the senior among these four.
Yeah.
And age looks like the most junior of them.
Also,
experience, position. And we should be able to make the balance between all these four. But we are doing this anyway. I mean, as human beings, we are supposed to be doing this. We are supposed to be able to make this balance because there are so many things that are contradictory in our lives. If we go in details in our lives, we'll see there's so many contradictions. But we are somehow able to function. So why shouldn't we be able to do this balance here? It shouldn't be so hard. Okay, so the conclusion is that we shouldn't see the Vaishnava from a material point of view and commit offense. We should be very careful not to commit these offenses, particularly toward advanced devotees, because this can be really very dangerous. And the safest thing is to consider everybody more advanced in this sense. In this way, we will guard against aparadas. It doesn't mean that we shouldn't discriminate, but yes.
I just wanted to mention that that's one of the benefits of being a new devotee. Mm-hmm.
But you can see these new devotees, usually they advance very nicely when they come, because they are very humble and they really sincerely they accept everybody as more advanced than they are. And in 2-3 years, then is the trial period, then the test comes, because they become a little advanced and now they can become puffed up and commit offense.
I also heard one senior devotee explaining how that when he joined in the ECs, it was quite simple, that whole structure. If somebody joined like 1 hour before you, he was your senior, and all Prabhupada devotees were pure devotees.
Yeah. And then the plan was very simple. There was one Prabhupada disciple. I mean, the topic of being simple, everything being simple. Then he said, my plan was simple. Brahmachari, sannyasi, rasa lila. he was grihasta already at that time. Since long time, but just talking about this. Good old times when everything was simple. Alright. So, Monday we'll continue verse 7. Thank you.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama.